Number one.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back again. You're with Reverend Harris, Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. It's Dr. Harris and Dr. Gene Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. We are back again on Friday night at 8 p.m., Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. We are glad to be on the air again one more time to visit you. And tonight is open mic night, where we talk about any issues or any no specific topic or anything like that. But just here to chop it up tonight. It's been a long week that we have had. A lot of interesting things have happened this week. And getting ready for the weekend. At least I know I'm getting ready for the weekend. I'm tired and exhausted, and I've been... Well, let's talk about a little bit what I've been doing today. I'm renovating a church, my church, one of our rooms, and been plastering for the past 2 days, and just kind of body is tired and aching, and so, but, you know, the struggle still goes on, and so I look forward to finishing up here hopefully next Monday or Tuesday, and we're fixing this room up for our Dr. Karen Crozier and our women, so that they would have their privacy and able to, you know, talk women talk and what have you. And so, you know, we just happy. We're just happy to be able to. Create a space for our women. You know, the women, I, you know, have done quite a bit for us, a whole lot, especially our African American women. Through time, they have. I don't believe that they get enough credit. You know, during the civil rights movement, there were many women, and many women that we won't even know their names that did good work for the struggle of black people, freedom and liberation. I mean, we know of Mother Rosa Parks, you know, we know of Coretta King, we know of Shirley Chisholm, you know, we know names like Sojourner Truth, Fannie Lou Hamer, and it's just many women who have contributed to this society. That to make things better for us today. And, you know, and I just want to acknowledge that. I really want to acknowledge the contributions that they have done here for our country. And so, you know, if you... like to call in and just, you know, maybe say hello tonight. Tonight is kind of like cruise control. We've been talking about the different episodes that's been happening here with our sister, who was brutalized by the South Carolina Police Department officer. And so we've been talking about that all week and, you know, trying to see, you know, highlighting that situation there about our little sister. We do know that she, her arm is hurt. There's some bruises that she had to endure during this rogue cop who just decided to just flip her over and drag her like she was a piece of meat up to the in front of the classroom. And so it's just been a very disturbing. Then I found out today that my high school, Roosevelt High School, that a police officer killed a student at the high school here in Fresno, at Roosevelt High School. And that was kind of disturbing to me because that's where I graduated from. And I believe Mr. George Finley had sent me the link from the television, and I kind of read it, and it just broke my heart. You know, I mean, why do we continually have to have guns? I mean, what would happen if we didn't have any guns? Has anyone ever thought about that? I mean, can we live in a society where we do not have guns? It seems like the gun situation is just really, really is getting out of control. I said many times that when it comes to guns, you know, the Constitution says we have the right to bear arms, and you know, and I feel that that's a right too. But I believe that there's not enough stiff penalties with our law enforcement. For one, law enforcement is not drug tested, from my knowledge. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone will call in and say, "We know what, Reverend Harris. I have some new information for you. You know, I do know police officers are drug tested." Well, I will say here in Mississippi, Fresno, police officers are not drug tested here. Not random drug tested, not drug tested at all. And I think that as taxpayers, we want to be assured that when an officer pulls that trigger, that he or she is in her right state of mind, psychologically evaluated, drug tested, to make sure that person, you know, that we give the taxpayer people, these individual men and women, all this power and authority. You know, when something is done, we want to make sure that all the I's and dot and T's are crossed. And so that's been a big concern to me, why law enforcement is exempt from being drug tested here in America. And so we're going to, and we just want to give a shout out. I see some new numbers on the board here, and I'd just like to give a shout out to our new listeners tonight. I know you've been trying to get on to listen to our show, and know you're a very busy mother. We just want to thank you for all your contributions and everything that you contribute as a mother and a black sister here to our people. And so we see Dr. Kennedy on the line here with Real Talk with the number one doctors. It's open mic night. Friday night is always open mic night. We really don't have a subject or topic. And we're just going to go to Dr. Kennedy, and then maybe we'll chime in on our next caller. Maybe they just want to listen in. Maybe they want to say hello, what have you. But we will go to Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Gene Kennedy, welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctors. Welcome to your show tonight.
Well, thank you so very much, Brother Harris. Again, so good to be on the air with my brothers and sisters, our listening audience. I hear our audience is growing, and that makes us feel so good because it means that we have something that people are listening to. They may not always agree, but it certainly is awareness and knowledge. And if we're not learning, if we cannot critically think about these subject matters that we bring up, then all we're doing is entertaining. This is not a show to entertain. This is a show that really gets you thinking. You don't always have to agree, but certainly it gets you think. Tonight when you were talking, Reverend Harris, about the idea of Americans having guns, and I could not help thinking that coming from the other side of the globe, from where the Americans or the Europeans came from, leaving Europe and leaving England and coming to this land, and with the idea that they would bear arms. They intentionally wanted to have arms because they felt that they would have to fight off the British and fight off the Europeans and fight off those who they were leaving to come and start a new world, as it were. So you'll never be able to ever take guns away from Americans because it is the signature. It is what makes an American. The gun is what makes the American. I remember living in Europe and watching the TV and seeing so many cowboys shows and always wondered what it would be like to just have a gun at your hip or a gun at your disposal, not realizing that many years later my parents would think of taking us here to the United States of America to call our home. And so I want to say that the gun is the American signature. It is the American. The gun is like apple pie and ice cream as it is to the Americans. So you'll never get rid of the guns. But do we need better laws? Do we need a different type of scrutiny? Does there need to be more safety nets put in place? I think there is room for that conversation. But again, when you tie the gun back to slavery and how it kept slaves in check, as it were, and how it kept things moving, you're touching a very sensitive place there. And I don't believe that Americans are going to be quick to give up their guns. And so that's going to be interesting to see where that leads to. But again, we have open mic tonight, and it may well be that our listeners will call in and talk about why they feel the gun is important, why it is important for us to bear arms, and what that means to them, black or white. Please have a conversation. Call us. Let us know what you think about that. Let's see where we go with our conversations tonight. So it's good to be with a listening audience. Good to hear your voice, my brother Harris. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow as we talk about your Freedom School and some of the great innovative things that you're doing as a visionary person and taking these young people into the next level of technology. So looking forward to that and looking forward to the remainder of the show. Very good to be here tonight.
There you have Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia is with us here today on Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. Dr. Kennedy, you know, we had a conversation yesterday, and we don't really talk much about international issues, but I was just kind of reviewing CNN website, seeing what they had on there, just kind of glimpsing through. And it says that Obama is going to send troops to Syria. And we were talking the other day, and you brought up a very valid point that I never really thought about. And you said that, or maybe I said it, one of us said it, said that, you know, it seemed like America always having wars with countries of color, but not never really having wars with countries of white descendant. Do you remember that conversation we had?
Oh, yes, I do remember that. I was wondering where you were going when you were saying that, but I do remember we had that enlightenment moment. Yes, we did. We did point out, as we were talking, I think I said to you that if you notice the countries that America goes into fight, and Europe, England, because, again, we have to remember, you know, one of the problems I had when I lived here, Brother Harris, and let me just say this because maybe it needs to be said. One of the problems that I had when I was here in the Valley was how narrow in our thinking we were when we looked at other blacks from other countries. We just didn't seem to want to embrace the awareness of that. And that this is one of the good things. One of the good things. There are several things, but one of the good things that I like about Atlanta is that the multi-diversity of blacks from other nations that are there. So it forces our African-American brothers and sisters to be more open-minded to see other blacks from other countries. Now, I said that because it's part of the conversation that you and I was having that led to the conversation about why it is that America seems to always be going into other countries that are and starting wars or at least dictatorships or at least trying to control those areas. And we pointed out the fact that those countries, again, aren't white countries. Our last wars that we had, and when we talk about wars, we always talk about America. We talk about their allies, the French. We talk about the allies as the Canadians, and we talk about the allies as the British. When we talk about going into other countries, those countries into countries of color. The last time they went into any kind of a Euro country, being Germany, being Russia, was back in World War One and World War Two. All the other wars that have taken place have always been people of color. Vietnam, people of color. And so even in, under Bush's regime, people of color. And so, you know, there's something to be said for the way war is done, that we go into our country. Even the Contras, when during Reagan's time, and Oliver North is still alive and well, but he's got his mouth so shut, he's not going to tell you what it was that Reagan wanted him to do, and the Contras when they went over there to the Panama Canal, etc. But again, countries of color, people of color. They don't go into Euro countries and have these fights. You're not going to hear that. America is not going to... She may feel the way she feels when she's having these conversations with the presidents of Russia, the presidents of Germany, but it's only going to be talk. They're not going to actually dance in and get in each other's face for war, because there's just something about taking down a Euro country, a white regime country. And when I use the term Euro, I'm being very specific about being Anglo-Saxon. And so, again, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's some theory out there on that, but it certainly is very significant and very intentional that we will not create the wars with other white countries. There are always countries of color. Africa, need I say anything more?
But, Dr. Kennedy, you know, it just seems that the amount of money, I mean, even when we look at the when Bush said that, Saddam Hussein said he had weapons of mass destruction over there, and America was in immediate danger for weapons of mass destruction. And I don't even believe till today they found weapons of mass destruction. At the time that Bush said that there was weapons of mass destruction, the amount of monies that we're spending in other countries and et cetera. Is it really worth, I mean, the amount of troops we lost in the wars? Let me be intentional right now. I'm going to go ahead and be intentional right now. Let me go ahead and be intentional. So what I don't understand is, how is it that America is supposed to be this, well, they on the charts, they're not as smart as they think they are, but I guess we have the biggest, strongest military in any other country, but yet academically we way down on a totem list. But my point is that how is it that many of our folks who are in prison, we're a country that has more people in prison for less offense, but yet at the same time, we can spend millions and billions of dollars to go over to destroy other countries. We spent millions and trillions of dollars to find bin Laden in a foxhole way down under the ground. But yet, you mean to tell me that we cannot figure out who is putting the drugs in the low-income community, which then gives job security to police officers, the prison industry, but yet America can always go over and solve everybody else's problems, but here at home, they can't seem to figure out how is it that all these drugs are getting into our community, and well as all of the guns that are out on the streets. So should charity start at home, or is this deliberately done so that we can keep a flow of revenue money going in America, like a washing cycle to make sure that we can keep revenue going in the poor community?
Wow, you're really getting into some territorial areas tonight, Brother Harris. You almost need to bring in a political
it's open mic night. I mean, we just freestyling, you know? I mean, no real topic, you know, we just freestyling, that's all.
you certainly are freestyling tonight. You're going into some areas, my brother, areas. I mean, you know, some folks will say, well, you know, I don't know that civil rights people talk about these kind of conversations. They think all we do is just march and say, you know, power to the people, and, you know, and then they think that's it. But, you know, there is a much bigger agenda, and we know that crime is a billion-dollar business here in the United States of America, and these countries who are identified as world leaders countries. You know, we're very good at the language and at the labels. And it really is about making the money. What is it that they need out of those countries? What kinds of minerals do they need out of the country? What are they after? And so it's obvious. If you follow, you know, Reverend Harris, you always say, follow the money, follow the money. And so you talk about the drugs coming into our communities. And you know, in America, again, she loves so very well. You know, we're as academia people, we're trained to cite people's research and give dates and where the research are. And we end up having these conversations about people's work and not about the emphasis behind what the message is of the work. We can get so caught up with the research and never talk about why the research was done and what was the purpose of that. And so you go straight to the heart of the problem where you say, in spite of everything, the drugs are coming into our communities, continue to be there, continue to disable the people so that they can be self-sufficient, continue to reward behavior that seems to keep us down and out. Let me say this, Reverend Harris. My daughter just got back, her and her husband just got back from South Africa. And what an eye-opener for two young people and two young couples at that. And one of the things my daughter said is, Mom, I had no idea that there is not a middle class in South Africa. And she said, I've always heard you say that America and England, Europe, really are the only few countries that have a middle class, that majority of countries do not have middle classes. And it's so true, and she was able to see that. She says, Mom, it's either poor or you're rich. There's no in-between middle class. And that's the problem we have here in America. We've gotten a middle class, and so therefore, unfortunately, the middle class is really the slave class because the rich do their own thing. We can't expect much from the poor. So the middle class is always trying to catch up and trying to balance, do the balancing act. Many countries do not have that middle class. And so therefore, it's very cut and dry. It's very evident you're either in the rich hemisphere or you're in the lower part of the hemisphere. And so this is what makes our country so challenging. Our democracy is still a teenager in its inception. And so she has money that she can just flaunt. She makes her money when she feels like it. She pays off who she wants to pay off. And so America has her own set of rules. She doesn't have to sign on to the United Nations. She does not have to answer to the Human Rights Watch people. She does not have to account herself for anyone. And so not that we're saying America is an evil place. Don't get us wrong. We're just showing you that the liberty that this America has, she has her own set of rules and her own set of games that she plays. She plays her own set of music. It makes it very difficult then to bring together groups of people in a super nation. She is the one that wants to say and do. And, you know, it has its ups and downs. It has its negatives and its positives in what we do. But crime is $1 billion. It works for America. It works in her own dictatorship. She calls it different names, but there's quite a bit of things we do in America that if you look in other countries, we would call it something else. You know, and it's so easy for us to say, well, if you don't like America, go somewhere else because we still have the best country. Well, then listen, what we say is so much that is given, much is required. If you have all of this going on, then we ought to do better. We ought not to have a country where we have so many of our young people that are disposable, we throw them away. We should not have a country where we dispose our elderly of them and they have no use in our society. We should not have a country where we do not know how to make our workforce healthy and well so that they can be vibrant, so we fight over health care and whether we all should be insured or not. We should not have a society where we are mocking amongst all nations, recognized nations, developed nations, we have the highest concentration of people in the prison system, our own people that we put into prison. These are not terrorists that we're bringing in and putting into prison. These are our own citizens that we put into prison and leave them there, and they suffer. And when they come out, they have nowhere to go. And then what do we do with our own military? Our own military returns home, and yet they cannot get the services that they need, yet they've given so much of their quality life to keep this country safe, and then when they come back, they're disposable. We're saying, America, you know better. You should do better. The world looks at you to take leadership. Then take leadership in the right way, and don't take people as disposable. We are human beings. We're not disposable instruments. We are human beings, and we have so much to offer the world. So that too much that is given, much is required.
There you have Dr. Jean Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. You know, Doctor, I'd like to jump back on to a conversation about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. Coming out of slavery, there was over maybe 30-something cities that were built coming out of slavery. We do know about Colonel Allensworth that was here in California, who came from the South as a chaplain in the U.S. Army, built a black city, the first black city here in California, which is just south of Fresno here, which the city now is just really a museum or a park or something. And what bothers me, Dr. Kennedy, about Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, our ancestors did not have Facebook. They did not have YouTube. They did not have Twitter. They did not have laptops. They did not have desktops. They did not have an iPhone, an iPad, or whatever you call this crap these kids using today. They didn't have the technology that we have today. But what is it that they had then that we don't have now to be able to build a community where their dollars, where they had to go and work in the white man's community and to be subject to be calling names, niggas, negroes, hoes, and just to be belittled to work to make money, but bring that money back to their community and to build their community, which their community looked at better than our white brothers and sisters' community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But what's interesting to me is that how the black dollar had a real value, how it circulated over 36 times before it left the community, which was very, very important during that time, and is important today. But our dollar is not circulating in our community. I mean, we're talking about a community that we had our own bus lines, our own stores, our own dentists, our own movies, our own railroad lines, our own everything, and it was just interesting to see how a thriving community our ancestors built it from their hands, from ground up. But before I go any further, I want to thank those who are on the line who had called in. Welcome to Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. I'll try to see if I can get you in here, maybe have a statement or comment, but we're going to go into our archives mode here, and like for those to stay on the line, and we'll get to you. So thank you. It's open mic night, Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. It's Dr. Harris, Dr. Jean Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia, and she is here with us. We'll be preaching at my church this Sunday. Please come and support her at 11 o'clock a.m., 1106 West Woodward, Fresno, California, 93706. And I'd like to say thank you as we go into our archives. And so, Dr. Kennedy, but what was more troubling about Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, was that our white brothers went and destroyed the government, went and destroyed a thriving city that was economically sufficient to be able to take care of their own, They didn't have to go ask for handouts to anyone else because we had all these skills of farming and bricklayer and carpenter and what have you, and we're able to build our own churches, build our own stores, build our own roads, build our own houses with the skills that we had. And it was all burnt down. It was bombed from the air by the U.S. government. And people, the public education system teaches, want to teach our babies today in their public school system that 9/11 was the first terrorist attack on American soil. That is a bald-faced lie. The first terrorist attack was in 1921, Tulsa, Oklahoma, bombed from the air by the U.S. government. These are the fairy tales that's being told, taught to our children. And then we look at the move that happened in Philadelphia, which bombs was dropped again by the U.S. government on black people. Black people here in America. And so then all of a sudden, Dr. Kennedy, they go 36 blocks of blackness. 36 blocks of blackness was destroyed in 12 hours, burnt to the ground. How, I mean, and the government had deputized children that was 9 and 10 years old to go out and shoot black people on sight. They looted into the houses and took all the valuables out of our black folks' houses and just stole it and just took it and then burnt the house down. Dr. Kennedy, you know, I look at the farms today that white folk have across America, and it seems to me that those farms, I would call them plantations at the time. We call them farms today. We just put a different name on it. Or it's a different name. But they're really plantations, all right? They passed it down to their children. What would have happened if Black Wall Street would have been passed down to us today in 2015?
Well... I love what you're saying. I'm just enjoying how you're painting such a picture, such a positive picture, because you're right. If we had that wealth that was evenly distributed, we may find ourselves in a much different place today. Money speaks, and it gives us a sense of power. I think what you would hear some of your audience thinking out loud, they would say, well, but in a way, they still have a lot of money coming through the black community. Look at the athletes. Look how much money they make. Look at the entertainers. Look how much money they make. So we may not have, quote-unquote, black Wall Street today, but certainly there's a lot of wealth that's still within certain black communities. And so you'd have that counter conversation. But I think what you're alluding to is the fact that we were able to be self-sufficient and had wealth that was distributed a lot evenly instead of the way we have wealth being done today. Yes, we would look much different. History would say something much different. Here's the sad thing about what you're saying. That's not taught in the history books. If we really have to have a conversation tonight, whether you agree with what Reverend Harris is pointing out or not, the bottom line is this is conversation that is not even shared in the history books. The children are not getting this. It's not being written in the history books for this to be shared in the classroom, so that people don't understand that there was a point in time in history where blacks thrived and they didn't have to rely on Hollywood. They didn't have to rely on being a rapper. They didn't have to rely on being in entertainment, but that they had communities, large communities, and that they thrived quite well, unlike what we have going on today. And that is a sad thing, that this was not passed on through history, through the history books, through the academia environments. And it is sad to recognize that. Very, very, very sad.
Dr. Jean Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia, speaking. We have a caller on the line. I'm going to go to them and see what they have something to say, or maybe they're just tuning in tonight on our show. But either way, we just want to be respectful and see if they have something to say. Welcome to Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. Do you have a statement or comment to this evening?
Hello?
Hello? Yes, you are. Welcome.
Okay. Hi. This is Renee. It's good to hear you guys on the radio. I'm fine.
Great.
How are you? Good, good, good. I'm excited about what's going on. It's nice to hear people getting involved. I mean, wow, that's really cool.
What state are you from?
I'm from Fresno. California.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you say Mississippi Fresno or something like that. Yeah, I think that's what you call it, right?
Yeah, our politicians, they upset at me, the mayor mad at me, the chief of police. I just can't keep nobody happy.
Oh, no, that's all right. I mean, you know, hey, somebody got to get mad. I mean, you know what I mean? We got a lot of stuff going on, and it's not right. And, you know, it's just really, I mean, it feels real good to see people being interested in, you know, we being interested in ourselves. You know, and caring about ourselves, you know, not letting somebody else just keep us down, hold us down, and, you know, not standing up for things that are right. So that's, you know, so what if somebody gets mad? So what?
What are your thoughts? Is this your first time a new listener, or have you been following us a while, or?
I off and on, yeah, I've been following. Yeah, I kind of, you know, internet.
What was your thoughts about the last incident with our young sister in South Carolina who was flipped over, choked hold first, flipped over on her neck and was drugged to the front of the class and was handcuffed? And the person that videotaped the session was also arrested for disturbing the class. What was your thoughts about that?
I think that was outrageous. I think that was just criminal. I think that if you body slam or you put your hands on your kids at home, you're going to jail, and you're going to end up having to go to an anger management class. And I think that you're going to jail. I mean, you don't go home, you don't go on vacation, you don't do any of that. You go to jail. And I think that, you know, grabbing that girl, flipping her over, and dragging her was out of line. And I don't know what kind of crime that the person committed by taping the incident. I don't know what crime was that. I don't understand that. I don't understand why they were arrested. I mean, aren't you free to film anything that you like? They film everything. They got a camera on every corner. They got a camera everywhere. So, I mean, why can't – I mean, I thought you were free to film anything you wanted.
Right.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I just thought that, you know, hey, there's nothing against that. So I don't know why she was arrested. I don't know why that girl was body slammed. I don't understand. You go to jail for stuff like that. And these people get to do this, and it's all good. It's not all good. It's all
wrong. Well, you know, we have Dr. Jean Kennedy on the line. She's an organizational psychologist. She's going to be leading a meeting tomorrow at my church at 1106 West. We're going to be trying to put together a STEM program there, a Saturday school at my facility there. But what was interesting to me is that I believe that educators, have to go to college, they have to take tests, they have to go through different types of settings of education. And so what gets me is that, you know, okay, granted, she might have been, you know, she not had her phone out, but the teacher called the administration. Why didn't the administration, instead of calling the police, call the parent? Okay. And de-escalate a situation, because anytime you call law enforcement, they're coming out. It's in their nature. I mean, it's like the wolf guarding the hen house. The nature of a wolf is to eat hens. So if you put a wolf by a hen house, that's what you're going to do, eat the hens. If you call law enforcement, they're coming to arrest and shoot and everything else. So what was the administration thinking about other recourses, Dr. Kennedy, that they could have taken to not get this to escalate to where it escalated? Why do we have police even at the schools in the first place?
Well, that is a conversation that needs to take place. Why do we? What is going on? Why the institution of education is not self-sufficient and self-contained? why is it that they do not have their own procedural applications for students where they have to bring in outside law enforcement? That's a conversation that the parents should be looking at. Anyone who's listening to our show who's a parent should really be asking your school district, when and why is it that you have to bring in outside law enforcement on incidents? Is not the school able to self-sustain? Yes, I know that there are times when children and adults, for that matter, will break the law. If there's a sexual activity going on, certainly the school cannot handle that. It has to go outside onto the legal area. But what are the guidelines on some of these things? We still don't know why that police is brought into the classroom. We still don't understand why it is that the administration wasn't brought into the classroom themselves and clear the classroom then. And dismiss the class and let the administration deal with the young child or the young lady herself rather than having it turn into a violent situation. So there's a lot of questions that this situation and others in the past and others to come will raise questions about why and what are the policies and what do we do. And the parents of this young lady, they need to become in the driver's seat so that they can push new policy. People in the community need to get behind the parents and drive new policy so that we can see the positive changes that need to take place in our school system.
But Dr. Kennedy, I agree with everything you're saying, but this police officer did an assault battery on a child who did not have a gun, did not have a knife, did not have anything but a cell phone. He did an assault and battery. If I would have did that to my child, police would have been called, CPS would have been called, CNN would have been called, Fresno B would have been called, all the TV stations would have been called, and I had to go to anger management. I have a court case. But this officer, they can abuse our children and then go home to go to McDonald's or Burger King like nothing has happened.
And so they have indicated that they have terminated this police officer. So now the public needs to stay on top of this case and not just put it underneath the carpet like we do so often, but that the public needs to stay on top of this case and make sure that justice is done. Make sure that this cop is given the full length of the law and that he is served accordingly and not allow for his union reps to give him a way of escape, not to allow his association, the police association, to give him, out of jail card, as it were, and to make sure that the system gives him the full extent of the law. Now, it will be interesting to see how that is done, and if indeed justice will be served on behalf of this family. And I hope they get the best attorney that can do this. There's an attorney there in North Carolina, in Georgia, that just got over $4 million for the case where the police shot that gentleman several times, and they were able to get them a nice reward. I hope that family is looking for the best of the best of attorneys so that they can get justice to be done. And it's not always about money. But if that is the value system that we use in this system of justice, then we hope that they get the best to represent them.
Well, thank you, Dr. Katie. I want to thank our caller. Please tune in with us.
Reverend Floyd Harris, wait a minute.
Yes.
Hello?
Can I say one more thing?
Did you see on the news where the guy at community hospital had beat his wife up? And the district attorney did not press charges against him?
I'm sorry, but we have like 15 seconds left. We can do another show tomorrow at 8:00. Can you call in tomorrow at 8 and tell us about it?
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
Okay. We'll do a special show for you tomorrow at 8:00. Thank everybody for tuning in to Real Talk with the number one doctor. Dr. Kennedy, what Bob Marley tells us?
Well, Bob Marley tells us one love, the work that we do is about one love. So one love, brothers and sisters. Thank you for calling in.
All right. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock, we'll be running live.
All right. Good night.